Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the New Heights Educational Group Talk Show. My name is Kaden Behan, and I'm a volunteer for New Heights Educational Group. And here with me is Pamela Clark. And we will continue our discussion from last week, talking about children with special needs in education. Hello, Pamela.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So I know you wanted to share some things that you missed from last time when our host was Maggie. So would you care to share?
Sure. I'll be happy to. I just wanted to go over a few things that I thought were really important on some of the different areas, what you guys were discussing, starting with autism. There is an autism scholarship program here in Ohio. Now, if somebody lives in another state that is listening, they would have to check into their own state. But here in Ohio, we have an autism scholarship program that gives parents and of children with autism who qualify for the scholarship a choice to send the child to a special education program other than the one operated by the school district and their residents. And the child, first off, has to have an IEP, and they have to go through the scholarship program that's on the Ohio Department of Education website. They can find it very easily by typing in Autism Scholarship Program in Ohio. Right now, the program is open, and it was open from July 1st, 2012, and continues until June 30th, 2013. And as you know, we serve homeschool, charter, and public school families, but I know that a lot of homeschoolers have gotten the scholarship by a few people that I know personally, and they are given $24,000 plus. Close to $25,000 a year to use to educate their children at home, and caregivers come in the home and provide for the children's needs or child's needs. And like I said, you can go on www.ode.state.ohio.us for information, or just type in Autism Scholarship Program in Ohio to find that information.
It sounds like a very good opportunity. 24
yeah,
awesome.
It really is, because it gives a little more control to these parents that, you know, have children with issues, and that's very important that they have choices and support, and that they can choose the caregivers that will best suit their children, because a lot of people with kids with autism, they, you know, there's a whole spectrum of needs, and not all children with autism need the same things, just like with all children. And that's kind of a misconception. A lot of people just think, oh, they have autism, they must all need the same thing because they have autism. And they don't think, well, you know, autism, there's a whole gamut of things that the child could have with it, like sensitivity issues to sound, or, but then other kids won't. So it just really depends. And this scholarship program really helps. And I want to share a brief story. It was a personal story of something that I witnessed early on in helping families, before New Heights was even created, actually. It was in another group that I had ran before New Heights was born. And there was a family that their son was in public school, and they actually had a number of children with autism. And the child that was in public school, the public school that this child went to really didn't understand what the child needed, and really it wasn't a good atmosphere for the child, and the parent had to go through an awful lot to get the child pulled out and to start the homeschool. them, and one of their children in particular that had the toughest time was a young man that he was nonverbal, and he had, you know, where he would hurt himself, hit his head against the wall when he would get aggravated, and just couldn't speak. And from her homeschooling, she was a nurse. She was a registered nurse. But she ended up homeschooling him. And in my group at the time, we did help her with activities and field trips. And we provided services to her. And we had celebrations. You know, we created a atmosphere where we, you know, gave support to her family as friendship and other things, and that's really important too. But she took it another step farther. She totally put her child first and tried to get into his head to help him. And from what the things she did along with her husband, they reached this child on a level that a lot of people do not. And this child went from being nonverbal to being able to read, write, ended up going to college and living on his own. And Everyone that knows anything about autism knows that's huge. But the message I want to get across for that is anything is possible. I don't care what special need or disability, if a person's more comfortable with that word, which I really don't care for it, I don't care what their problem is, but they can overcome it, period. Mm-hmm. And I think, and this goes now into the other things that you and Maggie discussed last week, where the bipolar disorder, the ADD, the ADHD, sometimes schools and doctors are very easily, you know, diagnose children. But sometimes that can be bad. Now, you want to know if your child has a special need, what it is, because you want to help them. And you really have to, you know, get out of your own head of thinking, okay, well, this is the way that I want to teach because this is the way I know, if you're a homeschooler or chart, whatever. But it's more about the student. So you have to figure out, okay, well, it's not about me and what I think or how they should learn. It's how they do learn. And then you figure that out. And then the sky, there is no limit. And so you want to be careful because a lot of these kids with these different labels, they end up using them as excuses for laziness, for not trying to reach their goals, not trying to pick a career path. They often just give up because they feel like, well, why should I bother? And that is never, ever the answer. And I want to kind of go into a little bit, too, about special needs versus disability. I really don't like the word disability because it's another label. It's another label for people saying, well, you know, my child has autism, so they can't learn. And, you know, I know a lot of people with kids with autism, and they don't think that way. But, you know, sometimes people do give up. Sometimes human nature has a lazy streak in it. But in general, people with kids with special needs, they're far from lazy because they have such a love and they understand that there's something else there that needs to be attended to. But it's really interesting to me, working in the educational field, to use the word special needs, because every time I try to put special needs on our paperwork, even for when a student comes in or a parent and they want to have tutoring classes, they say, we don't understand what this means. Is this a talent? And I'm like, no. Does your child have a disability? For some reason, our society is so hung up on that word disability
but they don't even understand when you put special needs instead of that. And if you label your child and then you say, my child has a disability, instead of saying, my child has a special need, you're just playing into that negativity where your child will pay the ultimate price because they're going to feel inferior to everyone else. And that's not a good thing. My children, they had special needs, and that doesn't make them less than. They were very bright, very intelligent children. They're both gifted in different ways. My youngest son has bipolar disorder, and I wanted to speak a little bit on that because I know other people use that as an excuse and a crutch for either reacting, overreacting to acting out, to just using it as an excuse in general. And I was talking to him a little bit before the show started, and he was saying, well, I had to find a stress release. I mean, yes, I taught him the way that he needed to be taught, and I got out of my own head on that of what how I thought he should learn. But anyone that knows my youngest son, he's quite amazing. He's 19, and he wants to be a maritime archaeologist, and he already is an advanced diver, rescue diver, has many different diving degrees. He's an underwater archaeologist already, has many different certificates, and has already been reaching his goals with that. But that was an outlet for him. So anybody with bipolar disorder, I would say instead of feeding the negativity, give them something positive. Find out what they want to do with their life and give them the tools. Do whatever you can to give them something else to focus on instead of that title. And you will see good things happen. And most people that meet my youngest son, they would never, ever, ever guess that he has bipolar or anything really wrong with him, because he doesn't show this common signs of it because of the things we did here at home. We kept the atmosphere calm and even. You know, and a lot of people, they aren't like that. A lot of people live in homes that aren't calm and even. But, you know, we can always change that too. There's always an out to behavior and behavioral issues. And I really believe that all these things can be overcome. And if you show your child that you believe in them, you will do everything in your power to help them through their struggles, they will want to do good. And they won't have the tendencies that we're seeing in our society today. The tendencies of destruction or hurting others, they will understand, they will see that we are more than just us as a person, that we're part of a larger dynamic that's out there, that we're supposed to be serving and helping others to make our world better. And that's the kind of message that we want kids to get, because they will be our future leaders. And that could be either bad or that could be good, depending on the kind of message and the kind of labels that we give these kids.
Okay. And do you think that, I know you had mentioned that many parents and people in general, when you mentioned special needs, they're unaware what necessarily that means. Do you think that a way of perhaps improving this understanding of what special needs is to educate parents and children on what it means to be a special needs child or in the special needs population?
Sure. And that's why we're doing the show. We're not doctors. We don't want to make people think that we're trying, you know, we're not experts in everything. But the thing is we're not afraid to learn. We're not afraid to talk about things. It's very important to have conversations with parents that have the same issues as you do, or even just to be around other people, for children to be around other positive children and adults, and really to quit that generational thing of being labeled. Of, I mean, does disability, does that word make you feel better than the word special needs? To me, I'd rather say special needs, because isn't that really what it is? And everybody, whether they're a so-called normal kid or a kid with a so-called disability or special need, do have special needs, because everybody's unique and everyone is different. And, you know, Joe and Sarah aren't going to need the same things no matter what their background is. So everybody needs a special need. And if it's looked at like that, I think we're going to get farther in reaching more people than, you know, tying ourselves down to titles and labels and negative words that really don't help anybody.
Very interesting. I know that another, I suppose, special needs population that we wanted to talk about was students with ADD and ADHD. And in my high school, I go to a medical-oriented high school, and we talk about different diagnoses very often. And ADD and ADHD is one of the most misdiagnosed conditions that we have among the younger population, at least in my experience. I've had a cousin who has been thought to have had attention issues, and many times when this happens in the classroom, either the child will be fidgeting or can't concentrate for long periods of time, suddenly teachers or bystanders of any means, or even parents, will ask themselves, why is my child not behaving like the other children? Why is my child not focusing and not able to concentrate as long as everybody else seems to be able to do? And I feel as though we are very quick to jump on there being an issue rather than, or like, for example, it being an issue so we can label that the reason for this problem, for this attention span issue, and for the other characteristics is because the child has a problem or the person has a problem. And I think we're just very quick to label that. As you said, labeling can be a very difficult thing, because then you accept that label and then you personify it and you don't try to reach your potential, as you've said. And I've seen this a lot, and it's a very hot topic with ADD and ADHD especially, because there's not a lot really known as to what causes it. And many times it's diagnosed in children who may not necessarily have the symptom, but it makes them believe that they have this issue within themselves and that this is what's preventing them from succeeding and overcoming this, instead of saying, okay, well, maybe you just need to concentrate a little bit more, paying attention, doing focused tasks, exercising those concentration skills. And I know myself, if I was labeled as having ADD and ADHD, like you said, I would believe, well, you know, my doctor told me I had this, so I can't concentrate by my nature. And I think that's another example of the dangers of labeling children, especially very early on, with conditions that are not very well known as to what causes it and what the characteristics are. So that's another example, I think, where we run into trouble.
I think an issue too is the, and I'm not a doctor. I'm not saying that you shouldn't, you know, put your children on the medication, but I would very much look at it and look into it and make the decision for yourself, because I think that the medications used can be very dangerous. They can be harmful, and I didn't use the medications for my kids, but I was a homeschooler. I thought if I'm gonna homeschool them, I'm not gonna drug them. I'm gonna figure out, you know, what they need and how to teach them, and that's what I'm gonna do. And it worked out very well for me without doing that. And I think both of my kids would agree with that. I really don't think that it's as necessary as some believe it is. I think that if you engage students and they're interested in something, then you're not going to have some of the issues that they complain about. But you can't do that in some of the school formats that put the children face.
Mm-hmm.
I know one of the things we wanted to talk about, too, and if any of you have children with these kind of things or these special needs and you want help or you want advice, talk about anything, you can always call us at New Heights. But I know, you know, we're kind of running out of time and we wanted to just touch base on celiac disease and gluten sensitivity resources because these things kind of go hand in hand. Diet plays a factor in ADHD, ADHD, autism, and everything that you do, diet plays a factor. But sometimes there's more problems than just diet. There's other underlying things. I know you wanted to share some stuff on that, Kaden.
Mm-hmm. And I was actually having trouble with being celiac intolerant, not necessarily the celiac disease, which I'll get into the difference. So I have a little bit background knowledge as to what celiac disease and celiac sensitivity can be. The actual disease is more severe than the sensitivity. What celiac disease is a gluten sensitivity, but to the extreme of being allergic to gluten, having issues with the inflammation of the intestines, when eating gluten products. And what gluten is, in the simplest terms, is anything made with wheat. And so these are your breads, your pastas, all things like that. And they can even be in items such as gravy, salad dressings, obviously cookies and cakes. So gluten surrounds us everywhere. And so we find that children nowadays are having either, you know, an intolerance or the actual disease to eating gluten. So it's not necessarily that well researched at the moment that as to what the cause of celiac disease is. We just know that the sensitivity will cause inflammation of the intestines. It can cause very, very bad cramping, which I've had. You know, I would wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes after eating pasta and have horrible, horrible cramps. It makes it hard to breathe. Also, having celiac disease and having that damage to the intestines can sometimes lead to more diseases such as Crohn's disease, which is another disease of the intestines, of sensitivity of the intestines. Also, symptoms that go along with celiacs include diarrhea as well. Sometimes people can be nauseated and vomit. I personally haven't had this, but I know that for those with the actual disease, that nausea and vomiting is more of a factor because it's more severe in the actual disease. Also, you can experience weight gain or weight loss depending on the type of person that you are. And many times it leaves you feeling very tired. You're not, when you have celiac disease, you're not absorbing nutrients that you need because your intestines, which is where most of the absorption of your nutrients takes place in the small intestines, they're unable to absorb foods with gluten in it. And because the gluten sensitizes the intestines, they'll become inflamed and unable to absorb the nutrients of the other food that you've eaten. So I know that what had led me to find out that I have somewhat of a sensitivity was that my vitamin D levels were very low. And so when I was trying to figure out why that was, because there was nothing wrong with my diet and my intake of vitamin D, even with the supplements, we found that it was because I was eating gluten or heavier amounts of gluten that my body wasn't able to absorb those nutrients. So it can lead to more than just an irritated stomach or an irritated intestines. It can lead to hair loss. It can lead to depression or anxiety. You can feel very tired because you're not getting the nutrients you need. in severe cases, can even lead to seizures and growth delay, bruising, you know, fatigue, as I said before. So it's something that really, in my experience, depends on who you are. It affects everybody very differently. I know some people with the disease that have as minimal an interaction with being allergic as I have had, and I know that there are some people that have very, very severe reactions to eating even the smallest amount of gluten. And the reason that we wanted to talk about this today is because it can affect your children. If you find that, and I know where we're trying to diagnose anyone or anything like that, as Pamela said, we're not doctors, but we just want parents to be aware that if their children are having some sensitivity, as I know that I had, and I was having it for a long time, and I couldn't figure out why I was having it, perhaps parents who are more aware, you can go to your doctors, as I did, and get blood work done and try to see, you know, what's irritating your children's stomachs if they're having the same symptoms that goes along with this disease. Because, as I said before, it can either be very severe or it can be an annoyance. And even though mine was not as severe, I definitely would prefer to be without all those early mornings of feeling very sick and not really knowing why. So this is what we just wanted to share, kind of. And you can get more information if you Google it. And if you're concerned about it, if you feel that your children or yourself are having similar symptoms, definitely, you know, go to your doctor. It wasn't invasive at all for me. All you have to do, you can just request a referral for blood work. And it's really as simple as that. You don't get any medication with this. You just have to restrict your diet and eat more gluten-free foods. So that's just what I wanted to share on celiac disease and gluten sensitivity.
I think it's important, too, since we're talking celiac disease and gluten, you know, another alternative to a doctor or along with going to your doctor is to see someone that deals with the natural alternatives, like a homeopathic or someone like that. And I know a lot of people that do have these issues that choose to go to that type of person than a doctor, and that's, of course, their decision. But it does seem to help them. Like you said, there is no medication for some of this. So if you can find a natural way and see someone that is an expert with that, that's definitely an alternative that you should look at.
Okay. Yeah, and definitely. And we just are mainly to, you know, give resources, as I said, to educate and to help people who may not be so familiar with the breadth of things that there are out there. And so that just, you become more familiar, so you become more educated, you can make better decisions as to how to approach, you know, the issues that you come across with your children or with yourself. And that's what our main goal.
Right.
So, Pamela, I don't think we have any callers at the moment, we can just go ahead and wrap up by saying that, you know, as Pamela said, we want to be very careful when labeling each other and ourselves when we come into contact with populations that have special needs, and we want to be very aware of what actually means, and to not necessarily label it as a disability or as something being wrong with somebody. As Pamela said, we all have special needs because we're all unique, and I think that's the message that we really want to take away from this show. Our next show, we're going to be having a Valentine's Day special and give you a few fun facts on Valentine's Day, and we hope to see you then.
Thank you, Kaden.
Thank you, Pamela. See you next show.
You're welcome. Yep, thank you, audience.
When troubles come and my burden.